Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Nothing to Fear, a casually released horror movie podcast. My name is Billy Schultz. I am the host, and every episode we watch a different horror movie. Sometimes we watch Luke unplug something mysteriously behind him. We don't know what that's about, but we talk about it. So
somebody cleaned this room and unplugged the thing that I plugged my computer into, so I noticed it wasn't plugged in, so I thought I would sneakily go around the convo and get it done, and I did.
When you say somebody, you know exactly who it is, right?
Well, it probably was a different sister or my dad, as they were here not that long ago, cleaning this room, so.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I'm glad you caught it now. Your computer just shuts off in the recording. But those lovely voices you hear are Luke Mason and Alex Wan. So how the hell has your April gone? Luke Mason, give us your check-in before we talk about this movie.
Honestly, it's been kind of nondescript. The only thing that I've done that's kind of different is that I'm on the bargaining committee for my union, negotiating a new contract with the employer. Ooh. And it is definitely as exciting as it sounds.
I assume that's the pub trivia union you're part of?
The pub union.
Yeah.
No, it's it's an interesting experience.
How many days till you go on strike?
Do we
say the S word here?
I don't think it will come to that, I'm sure. So
sounds like boring grown-up stuff, where you're just like, oh no, I really have to be doing adult things now in my day-to-day life and not just like...
It's the great trick. The great trick of every person who wants to, get something out of the world, I guess, is that put the really important stuff in the middle of all of the boring stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's fine. That's fine. The other voice you're hearing, Alex Wan... How are you doing, Alex? How's your April treated you?
It's all right. Yeah, kind of. Also, not too much. Just regular day-to-day things. The indoor-outdoor spring season of multi-sport has started, so that's been good.
Ooh. It's no longer What's for a Snack, right? What's the team?
No, What's for a Snack has been on a hiatus. This is with friends I went to school with.
Yeah. Ah, cool, cool, cool.
Plus various others.
Best of luck to your champion.
Is
are you defending a title or?
If by defending a title you mean holding on to the glory of the title from 2 years ago, yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah, sure.
So
that's fine.
So yeah, What's for Snack title is like the Arizona Coyotes. They're now an inactive franchise and can be reactivated whenever needed.
Yeah.
Well, we're inactive, but we're thinking about becoming Mormons. So very accurate, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. I did hear about the big trade of What's for Snack to Salt Lake City, which is a shock to be sure.
No one expected it, but now they're the Utah Goldfish.
Yeah.
What was the Coyotes? It was a Canadian team first. Was it the Winnipeg Jets before? Yeah. Okay. And now the Jets are back.
The Jets are back. Fucking back.
Coyotes are gone. Honestly, the Coyotes are like... They're like a relationship that should have ended 15 years ago, but they just tried to make it work, and they just tried to make it work, and everybody from the outside could see it wasn't going to work, but they just kept trying to make it work, and then...
They did it for the kids.
And then it's just like, they went out with a whimper, and kind of...
Not unlike a Coyote.
Yeah, and then everyone's just... I honestly, as a hockey fan, someone who's watched this franchise for a long time, my thought was finally, just put them out of their misery.
Oh,
Utah's got snow though, right?
They were playing in an arena for 5,000 people. Like, they couldn't even get an NHL size arena.
That seems really small for a hockey. Yeah,
hey, wasn't it like a college arena though?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure that there were dozens of dedicated fans there.
Basically, they were just getting financially bailed out by all the lucrative teams in the league. Like, it was just they were a dead weight.
Well, we'll see if the Coyotes name sticks or what happens. This isn't a sports podcast.
Yeah, but
I'm way out of my depth. Honestly, I was surprised I knew I had like relevance to contribute to the conversation about the team moving at all.
Well, I think the newsworthy story is actually how they went about doing it, where like the Coyote management just kind of surprised all of the employees and all of the players saying, oh, by the way, we're not going to be in Arizona. And like people live there and have families in Phoenix, you know? And it's like, oh, and then they just, I don't know. It was kind of.
Sounds like they could have used a strong union man like you.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Fight in the trenches. I'm glad the rec league is back for you, Alex. I hope you have some good games coming up and you don't injure yourself in any significant way.
It's inevitable, but, you know, happens.
Well, you know, you do it for the love of the game.
That was a good movie.
That so was the movie we watched today. Not not a spoiler.
Yeah, when are we going to become a baseball movie podcast?
My April.
What is your favorite baseball movie? I think mine's Moneyball.
I wouldn't really call that a baseball movie, though.
The one where they...
That's 100. That's all that movie's about.
No, that's a money movie. That's like a finance movie. It's not a baseball movie.
It's got to be Angels in the Outfield.
Definitely Angels in the Outfield. Man, that cast
I think that's
stacked.
More of a religious movie. That's not a baseball movie.
When the Angels win.
Yeah, Danny Glover, Christopher Lloyd, JGL, young Jordan Joseph.
Yep.
Gordon Joseph Levitt nailed it first try. Yeah, what a film. Anyway.
Sorry.
So yes, my April's been interesting. Not only have I officially finished all the requirements for my psychology degree at the time of recording, and I'll be graduating
in
June.
Let's fucking go.
About that. Yes, felt really good. Last week when I went down on Monday to like meet up with I had a group presentation to deliver. I met with my partner. We were talking and like going over our notes and stuff. And then we saw our professor in the hallway and we're like, hey, can we just present this to you now? And then I don't have to come onto the campus tomorrow. And she was like, yeah, come to my office. And so we just like sat in her office, did our little presentation, talked for 10 minutes. And she was like, tick, off you go. Congratulations. So that feels really good. I feel really relieved. I've got no finals coming up. I've got no like school stress.
Wait. Hold on. Pause. Is this presentation, did the other people that didn't have the luxury of, you know, seeing the professor on not the class day, did they have to present in front of the professor and other people?
No, they had to, it was like, they had to either record something and send it in. And so it was like, all of it was just like an individual recording session, like a 5-minute little like oral report. And we were just like, well, we're here. We were going to record it, but can we just tell it to you? And she was like, yeah.
Because in my mind, it was like, it's like a presentation that you do in front of the class. And then you're like, oh, prof, now that you're here, we'll just do it to you. And then they were like, okay. And then everyone else has to like, not only present to the prof, but to everybody else. And you got out of that. That would have been pretty sick.
No, that would have been pretty sick. But we did have to do a class presentation. We had one of our assignments was we needed to pick a subject, a topic that like annoyed us, because it was a class called Sex and Gender.
Did you talk about horror movies?
We didn't talk about horror movies. We talked a lot about like, you know, trans issues in the news and like, you know, inequalities in child rearing and stuff. But the whole premise was we had to pick one thing that we were annoyed about and talk about it for 2 minutes. And it was supposed to just be like a rapid fire thing. Everyone in the group did a different topic. And my group was the only one who understood the assignment. Everybody else did like a 20-minute boring report, only talking about one thing with like citations and sources. And like my teacher at the end was like, literally your group was the only one who understood that everybody talks about something different for 2 minutes meant everybody talk about something different for 2 minutes. So I was just like,
I don't think it could be.
I'm good at school.
It could have been clearer, I think.
Oh, we'll see. But that's not the big exciting thing that I did in April. Obviously, out on the East Coast here on the 8th, there was the total solar eclipse. We were actually able to see it to totality. Saw the whole thing from start to finish. It was an amazing day. Everyone within the sound of my voice, if like a solar eclipse ever falls close to where you are or within traveling distance in your lifetime, absolutely go check it out. It's like, it was a weird, magical, crazy day, and I'm so glad I got to experience it. I know Calgary got a little sliver. My mom said she saw a little bit, of the Sun go? Was there any coverage at all out in BC, Luke, or was it like nothing?
Not really. It was a kind of a cloudy day, so it wouldn't have been. And I think we were like, it would have been a very minimal amount of coverage over here. So.
Yeah.
That's cool, though.
But it was totally cool. Like
totality cool.
I can totally totality cool. I can understand how people in the past before science would just like have completely lost their shit by being like, why is daytime dark? What do I do? Time to panic.
Well, I mean, like,
the world is ending, right?
Daytime is not
the truth.
Safety.
Is waterfalls blew people's minds. So,
well, there you go.
An eclipse.
It was easy.
Yeah.
Imagine showing this podcast to somebody from 2,000 years ago. It'd blow their fucking mind.
Yeah, it's true. They would be like, what sort of devilry is this? They are.
We'd all be chased out of town. They'd murder us.
Not unlike a horror movie.
Not unlike a horror movie, which is what we're here to talk about today. So, Luke, you picked 28 Days Later. So, yeah, you know what? I think I might shake up the format a little bit because it doesn't really matter. So I think what we should do is drop in the trailer and then have Alex do the recap. And then we'll talk about our thoughts, initial thoughts, ongoing thoughts, and just like talk about it all after the trailer. So with that being said, 28 Days Later is what we watched. Not 28 Days, a movie starring Sandra Bullock. That is in no way related to this franchise. But I think there could be room for it. So anyway, yeah, here's the trailer, folks. Check out doesthedogdie.com for all the triggers that we might talk about and spoilers from this point forward.
Hello? Hello?
So who are you?
Wake up today in hospital. Wake up and I'm hallucinating.
I've got some bad news.
They're infected.
Infected.
Father.
Infected with nuts.
Oh, I shouldn't have done that.
The blood. There's something in the blood.
Someone. You never go anywhere alone unless you've got no choice.
Hello?
Listen to me. Only travel during daylight unless you've got no choice.
This really is a bad idea. You know why? It's obviously a bad idea.
We have to leave now. More will be coming. They always do.
They're dead, and you're gonna be next.
Huh? 28 Days Later is a 2002 British post-apocalyptic horror film directed by Danny Boyle and written by Alex Garland. It stars Cillian Murphy as a bicycle courier who awakes from a coma to discover the accidental release of a highly contagious, aggression-inducing virus has caused the breakdown of society. Naomi Harris, Christopher Eccleston, Megan Burns, and Brendan Gleeson appear in supporting roles.
There we go. It was made for $8 million. It took in worldwide $82.7 million, a tidy return on investment. And both Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb rate this very highly, with 87% on Rotten Tomatoes and 7.5 on IMDb. I thoroughly enjoyed watching this movie, despite the limitations in finding it. But Luke, you picked it. Kick us off. Tell us your thoughts. Yeah, off you go.
Well, two tangential points prior to actually talking about the movie. Alex Garland, who wrote this film, recently wrote and directed Civil War. And I would highly encourage anyone.
Yes. I'm seeing that on Tuesday.
Who hasn't seen it to see it. It's almost flawless. Like, it is such a great film. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Kirsten Dunst is, like, maybe the greatest living American actress. Like, she is just unbelievably good in this movie. And it's so...
There's a power couple, too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, Yeah,
Jesse Plemons is probably the greatest American actor of our generation.
He's up there.
And I say that unironically. Like, he's so
great.
Fucking good.
He is very good. Yes.
He's good.
So, yes, a PSA, go see Civil War in an era where we aren't overrun with great movies. This is a truly great film. Way better than Men. I can tell you that. Way, way better than Men. And then also, the premise of this film is just, it's too unbelievable. Who could believe that a virus in a lab could accidentally leak out and just disrupt everything in society? That is just too far-fetched for anyone to touch.
It's wild.
Unbelievable.
It's complete
unbelievable.
Science fiction. Yeah. It's crazy. How could it happen?
Yeah, this movie I'd seen many times around-ish when it came out. Obviously, it was we've talked about a few of these kind of touchstone films. This was definitely a cultural touchstone when it came out. You can definitely tell what era it's from watching it. I realized I don't love this editing style anymore. I'm glad it happened, I think.
Agreed.
I think I'm glad that the early
2000s... but you enjoy... You enjoy the
stick the landing, Alex. You got this.
parliamentary horror. No.
Parliamentary.
Starts
I think
with
that's just
P.
called Parliament.
Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Paranormal Activity. Parliamentary, paranormal.
Yeah, but that's not a, that's not even a, they're not even similar at all, editing wise. You know, the amount of cut editing in this movie is like, it's more like Saw, I guess, than it is like Paranormal Activity, I would say.
Hmm.
And I don't really love it in Saw either, but I kind of enjoy, I guess I like that it happened, but I don't really like it. I don't know. It's nostalgic.
Yeah, it speaks to like a super like sort of edgy, like new millennial thing. We're like, we're fast and we're quick and it's the age of the internet and check out how like, and you're like, okay. Settle down.
I really remember liking this movie back in the day. And then on this rewatch, I think it's still a decent film. I don't think I like it as much as I used to, but I think that's mostly just because tastes change over time. And I feel... I thought the last 15 minutes was truly great. I really enjoyed the ending of this movie. But I found a lot of the build-up to be... I forgot how, like... convenient almost every plot point was in this film. You know, the rescue characters show up exactly when the rescue characters need to show up, and the unfortunate and preventable death happens exactly when the unfortunate and preventable death needs to happen. So it's a bit more of a cookie cutter film than I remember, and I don't remember it that way because of how like different and edgy and stylized it was. But all that said, it's still quite, I think, a good film. I think, you know, Cillian Murphy is enjoyable and excellent and so skinny and like
so skinny.
It definitely like the Walking Dead. It's exactly the same beginning as The Walking Dead. So I think that's kind of funny.
To a T.
But I do know also that like behind the scenes stuff of how they like Danny Boyle got to like have London look deserted for like 15 minutes of filming early one morning and only one time, and they just captured it, and it was like that shot is so iconic. The theme song is so iconic. So yeah, I think this movie is not as good as I remember, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah. I was reading a little bit of the Wikipedia page, and they started filming this. Filming started on September 1st, 2001, and they had the like lockdown city street scenes for it was. Yeah, it was like they did early morning before rush hour. And they said that there's a scene right at the start where he goes into Piccadilly Circus and there's all the like handwritten notices of like people like missing, dead, questioning. Right. And that was like something they filmed, I think, on September 8th or 9th, and then like 4 days later, not 28 days later, but 4 days later, when like in the aftermath of, you know, the attacks on the towers in New York, like there's similar scenes of that. And it was just like weirdly chilling. Yeah. I think it, you know, they capitalized on their I guess, airplane-free skies while they could, because, you know, everything was locked down in the air, in the aftermath
until the very end of the film.
Until the very end of the film. But yeah, no, I was reading that. I was like, oh, wow, that's like weirdly prescient. But the whole opening of this movie, really, the quiet made me think of like April 2020, like right after lockdowns kicked in, and there was like nobody was driving anywhere and there was no planes. I went outside a couple times, like walking around, and it's just like deserted everything. And I was like, oh, boy, this is spooky. And so it, you know, recalled those times when I was watching this movie. But Alex, what's your initial salvo on 28 Days Later? Had you seen this before?
I have never seen it in its entirety, actually. I've seen the opening chimpanzee scene a few times.
Sure, yeah.
And then I've also, like, I've seen the scene where Jim wakes up from the hospital and walks the empty streets, because, you know, that's pretty iconic. But no, I've never seen the whole movie in its entirety. I will say, recognize that music right away. It's Godspeed You Black Emperor. If you ever have a chance to see him live, they'll play it in its entirety. It's very fucking good, and you should go see it if you ever have a chance to. But yeah, in terms of the movie, it was good. It was fine. I was entertained for most, if not all of it. I think what really interests me the most in this movie is just seeing how versatile Danny Boyle's like filmography is.
Yeah.
That he did like stuff like this, and then like Trainspotting, and
Ex Machina.
Did he do Ex Machina?
No, that was Alex Garland.
He did do Ex... Oh no, that's Alex Garland.
He did Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah,
Slumdog, and right. 127 Hours, and then, you know, it's just like, what a fucking diverse genre of movies this guy does, which is really cool. But yeah, it was like, it was fine. It wasn't like overly long, and it was to the point, and it really, I think, watching this post-COVID makes it feel like a little bit more eerie, I guess. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because we actually lived it, and it wasn't, it became a reality for a bit. So I don't know. I wonder how I would have thought about this movie, you know, pre-COVID. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, because I'd never seen this movie before today. I had obviously heard of it. It's a cornerstone in horror movies of this century for sure. And I know that, you know, when you have lists of like death scenes that are really affecting, they the part, spoiler alert, when Brendan Gleeson dies, that's like usually makes the list. And obviously the scene of him on the bridge with the Houses of Parliament behind him, and all like just him in hospital scrubs and grocery bag full of cans of pop, is iconic. We've seen that in stills all over the place. But I was happily enjoying the whole movie, despite the difficulty of finding it. So I was unable to find this movie through legal means, sad to report. But boy, what an argument for keeping a hold of physical media, because I was like, man, I'm pretty sure there's like copies of this DVD around that I could find if I needed to. But it's not any streaming services. You can't buy it on the iTunes store. You can't rent it on like Amazon. You can't rent it on YouTube. And it's just like, wow.
But this is where the movies are now.
If you want to watch them, hang on to it. What are you talking about? This is where I watch thing.
This is the video store. This is Blockbuster now.
This is the... Yeah. So it was hard to watch it. The site where we watched from, it took a long time to buffer up. You know, we'd watch 40 seconds and then it would buffer. And then we'd get a minute and then it would buffer. And eventually, by like the end of act one of the movie, so right around the point where they're getting out of his parents' house, then we'd get like 25 minutes at a chunk and then it would buffer. And then we get like 40 minutes. And so it was just like, okay. I put it off. I thought I had plenty of time to watch it this Sunday. And let me tell you, starting it at 10, I was like, oh boy, I don't know. Maybe I'm going to have to read Wikipedia and nice. Finish reading them. But maybe that's just how I do movies now, like following on from my Dune 2 experience, where I only see the first two-thirds of it and just like it ends and I run out of time.
And then you get to write it yourself.
I did watch it all the way to the end. Yeah. Then I get to decide what happens. I really like the performances in the movie. As much as it copies The Walking Dead, or it doesn't copy The Walking Dead, Walking Dead copies this.
Well, although I don't know when the graphic novel came out, right? So it could have been before.
Let's pull it up. Let's pull it up.
That's checkable.
You know, we can do that.
Alex, you do some research.
We can do that.
I will say I was not prepared to see full frontal Cillian Murphy nudity right away. It was like within the first 5 minutes, it's just like, there he is, fully naked on the hospital bed, dong out for all the world to see. And I was like, that man is an Oscar winner.
Walking Dead was 2003.
The graphic novel?
The graphic novel?
Yeah.
It did, I guess. I don't know if it copied, maybe, but it's the same. So
it could be like spontaneous generation, you know, a deep impact Armageddon situation. Yeah. But I would be very surprised if the writers of the Walking Dead graphic novel weren't like, all right, 28 days later.
We're going to go way longer than that.
So way longer. Yeah. Okay, I had a question. Was this one of the first like big sort of post-apocalyptic action-y movies that wasn't set in the States? Because I was trying to think of before we had like Independence Day, which is obviously very United States-centric, and the trope is always New York is getting destroyed. So was this like the first time we got to see London under the same effect?
Maybe. There might have been some other movie in like the 70s or 80s that had...
I mean, Planet of the Apes ended up being in New York, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, we see the Statue of Liberty. Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it was the Paris one that they found.
Oh, maybe. Or the one
this
in
is
Vegas.
The one we practiced.
Our practice, Statue of Liberty, we're going to give America the good one. I find it interesting that this movie is, like, people very casually lump this in with zombie movies because of, like, the hordes of...
Rage.
You know, raging people, but they're not undead, and they're not, they, even though I've seen people talk about this movie as flesh eating like monsters, I don't see any of that. It's just like extreme super rabies virus, right? Like,
it's
they're
like
not,
quarantine.
I didn't see, you don't see them eating people
or Wreck. It's like the same universe as Wreck. So I guess that's a potential apocalyptic, not America, because that was in Barcelona, but like.
That's true, but that wasn't later.
Apocalyptic. It was like in one. It was in one building.
Well, until Wreck 2 on an airplane or something.
I think that was Quarantine 2
or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool setting. England isn't really the, like, there is something Americana about zombies, so it was cool to see
for
it
for England, James.
Ooh, Alex Trevelyan. Yeah,
were these? I don't think these are officially zombies, though, right? Because it was a rage virus, and it didn't reanimate the dead, right? It just infected them, and then you could kill them.
Which, like, I haven't seen, there's a sequel 28 weeks later, and then actually there's talk of doing 28 years later with Danny Boyle and Alex Garland and Cillian Murphy back in
some
role.
Are they doing 28 years later as well? Oh, yeah, that's the one you're talking about. Oh, I thought you were talking about 28
sorry,
weeks.
Sorry, I gotta go to the bathroom.
Oh my god.
Okay, we're just going to keep chatting. Luke's always got to pee.
Get him a baggie.
All right, Luke's back.
We didn't talk about anything important.
We didn't, because I want to get your take on this. Obviously, this movie has its own set of rules, but I feel like it's impossible that this infection could spread across oceans because of how fast it infects people, right? Like, it's like they said 10 to 20 seconds before somebody turns. Even if, like, nobody got infected until they were on the plane, it would be over in a matter of minutes. So it's like, I feel like...
Was it worldwide, though?
It couldn't.
My understanding was it was...
There was reports of outbreaks
in
Paris and New York.
Like, London and Paris and I think one other place that I didn't quite remember, but I don't think it was ever officially stated that it was worldwide. Right? Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Billy, you watched the movie this morning. You tell me.
Well,
I think the Christopher Eccleston character mentions the other outbreaks.
But he also...
And that's like in his part.
Yeah, they were also saying at the end, hopefully, that in this theory also, that it didn't spread really beyond England because of the deadly nature of it. Like, it would be too fast. And then that's why the scene with the airplane at the end is supposed to be hopeful. Because... there's still an airplane. Because
it's like a Danish plane or something, right?
Well, it's like way up in the
sky.
Yeah,
it's Finnish.
Oh, Finnish?
On the Wikipedia, it says a Finnish fighter jet.
You can't tell by the curves of the jet, Luke?
I guess I can't.
With hips like that, it's gotta be Danish.
I mean, that's
It's got to be finished.
That rationale is why the first SARS COVID virus in 03 was a lot less of a problem than mm-hmm. the second one, was that it was much more virulent. So it would kill the host before the host had time to pass it on to someone else, which is actually like in
the amoral, best kind of virus.
It's a bad virus in the sense that it is bad at surviving. So like the pandemic COVID is actually a very, very successful virus because viruses don't want to kill their hosts.
It's good at propagating itself.
Yeah. I felt like, this rage virus couldn't cross oceans unless it would be like someone on a boat is infected. The boat just kind of drifts to the mainland and we don't know how long until they starve to death kind of thing. And they don't eat each other, it seems like, which is what is more.
That's kind
of the zombie element of it, is that zombies never seem to go after other zombies, right?
It's just rage virus consumers don't go after other rage virus consumers.
Yeah.
We don't have
rage recognize rage.
Yeah, we don't have to use the Z word here. Here's a theory though.
Like Shaun of the Dead.
What if here's my theory. Let's say someone was trying to smuggle. Well, because it doesn't necessarily have to be like a rage virus. Okay, we'll say zombie, just to make it easy.
Infected. They call them infected in the movies.
Infected. Okay, it doesn't necessarily have to be an infected attack someone, and that's why they get infected, right? It's just blood transfer.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right? It's just blood or saliva getting into someone's system. So, like, let's say there was a contaminated piece of luggage or a contaminated piece of good that got transported across borders or whatever, right? And someone happened to lick their doorknob and, you know, that's how I can cross oceans and stuff, you know?
That's how we do it. Okay, yeah. People gotta stop licking doorknobs, people.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the first sort of set piece, this facility with all the chimps, and just the idea of like people asking for this type of outbreak to occur, because that did not look like there was any security at all. And having just like one nerdy scientist to be on shift, like, come on, guys, what are you doing? You know, this is a big virus. You gotta get some extra cages, some guards.
Well, if real life has taught us anything, it doesn't matter, right?
True.
Yeah, we have to create the terrible virus so that we know how to defeat the terrible virus.
Yeah, I don't know. It should have been like rabies or something. It's like the idea that they're just like, no, we're doing science by making a virus. Oops, it's really contagious. No, you have to listen to me. Oh no, everyone's dead. Just, I don't know, very silly. Very silly.
Also, the thing about that opening scene, like, there's something about these groups of people that do things in the most fucking dumbest and most inconvenient to other people ways that just like bothers me to a core, you know? Like, obviously this is a movie, but like, you know, I also see like there's like people like sitting on streets to like protest oil and shit, and it's like, yeah, we're not gonna let this fucking ambulance get to the hospital. I don't know. This felt like very like evoked similar emotions to that opening scene. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're so far up your own ass and you're so like you're so jet focused on your ideology that you can't see anything else. Like, there's something about that just kind of bothers me.
Like, the idea of protesting something that should be disruptive to society, like, that's the point if you want to like get a social message out. But like attacking a medical facility and just like releasing animals willy-nilly is like completely irresponsible. And when you blockade a road and people are late for work and late to their jobs, then it like disrupts the public running of society. And yes, you should let ambulances get through and make sure people aren't like at risk. But like even the most like PETA Greenpeace person trying to release animals, it's like, if these are like infected animals, you don't know. Don't be fucking with that. Like, don't be fucking with that. It's not like it's a makeup testing facility and they're like letting rabbits go or something. It's like, this is clearly, these are animals who are dangerous, and it sucks to lose them and you want to set them free, but like, they've got no quality of life. Like, it's,
but like,
shut the whole thing down. But like,
I think the part that annoyed me the most is like, they repeatedly, or the scientist was like, they're like contaminated, they got a virus. And it's just like, you don't even take that second to listen and to think about like the consequence.
Yeah, no, I hated
potential
that.
Consequence hated of your that. Actions. Like people that think that don't think annoy me. I think that's the point I'm getting at. That don't think before acting or like
well, that's
think
the,
about
that's the power yeah. of ideology, right?
I guess yeah.
Like that's yeah. There's a great.
I did my own research.
Yeah, there's a great Christopher Hitchens line on that where he says ideology can break, but it can't bend.
Yeah, and I think it falls into this convenience thing of yours, Luke, where it's like, well, the movie needs the animals to get out and the virus to get out so the movie mm-hmm. can keep going. So it does. Oh, well, that's the lab. The monkeys are out.
They got their comeuppance right away.
They got their comeuppance right away, and then it immediately spread. But there's like, there wasn't even like a button to push where all the doors slammed down or something. Like, come on, shadowy, mysterious scientists in like weird basements. Do better. Do better. Okay, so then we get the sort of quest of Cillian Murphy's character Jim going around trying to survive, meeting people, collecting people, losing people. Very, very zombie survival Walking Dead thing. Let's talk about the bit where he was traveling with Selena and Mark, the two characters he meets first. So how do we like them? Selena, the eventual love interest, and Mark, guy who is obviously going to be sacrificed. Like, no chance.
Next line, next part of a movie. It's like, oh.
Pretty convenient, huh, Luke?
Our hero's in an impossible situation. But don't worry. I wrote Ex Machina. So I'm going to write Deus Ex Machina here. And save them by having people who, like, are pretty not open to other people. All of a sudden just gratuitously save his life.
Yeah.
And then, oh, by the way, you're going to die. So we're going to show how callous Selena is, actually. I don't know. Is like, you know.
She doesn't care. She's been hardened.
More
we
movie
got
shit.
We got Mike. Mark. You know, Mark's obviously a budding comedian. He's working on his stand up for when the world comes back. I liked his little joke about the drunken giraffe yeah. in a bar. Can't leave that line there. It's not a line. It's a giraffe. Aha, very good. Not the right time, buddy. Like, pick your...
I mean, if that's moment. Not the right time, what is the right time? It's the end of the world.
I guess so. I feel like, you know, Luke would do something like that. You'd be like, I know that we're running for our lives, but I just thought of a joke, you guys. I did like the part where Selena and Jim are running and he's like coming down off of a sugar high because all he's had to eat or drink was like pop or chocolate or candy. And it's like, yeah, you haven't had anything approaching a nutrient since you woke up from a coma, so you're going to be in trouble. Which they don't talk about in other zombie movies. Everyone's just kind of like, I got stamina. I'm eating whatever. So I thought they did good with that.
Why did it have to be Mark that died, you know? Why can't movies be more Psycho and just kill off who you think the main character is, like a third or halfway through the movie? I think that'd be neat.
I would buy that if Cillian Murphy was a bigger name at the time, but this is the movie that like launched him.
That's true.
Like launched him into fame.
Who played Mark?
I don't know. Random British actor number 5.
Let's see.
You're the info guy, Alex.
Mark was Noah Huntley.
Noah Huntley, and we all know what happened to Noah Huntley. We household name that Noah Huntley.
Yeah, what the fuck is he in? Ah, of course. He was in The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Oh, really?
Wait, was he? What was he in
was,
that?
He was the older Peter Pevensey.
Oh, he was older Peter Pevensey. Yeah. Okay.
And, of course, he was also in Snow White and the Huntsman. And Paul, Apostle of Christ.
So, he's working. He's getting his name out there. All right, so Mark, any thoughts, Alex? Mark and Selena?
I mean,
you liked Mark more?
I liked Mark. He was, like, kind and was like, yeah, I understand you want to go back to your parents' house. Let's go, you know, even though he obviously understood the implications of that. And he was, it was like a nice little rescue mission. But, you know, as any pretty predictable movie goes, you know, someone needs to die to show you the terrors and the perils of this universe. And then, obviously... You know, it can't be the main character, and it can't be the love interest, so it's got to be Mark. Unlucky.
Sorry, Mark.
Honestly.
Later days. It just kind of seemed like, what were they doing for the 4 weeks? Had they been in the little store in the underground station for that whole time? And then they were just like, oh, well, we got nothing else to do. Let's
throw a bunch
we'll
of Molotovs around.
Yeah. Yeah. Blow up a gas station. So yeah, it's like kind of like a little bit of a quest where Jim is collecting people. And then we meet Brendan Gleeson and his daughter, Hannah. What's Brendan Gleeson's character name?
Taxi Man.
I can't remember. Taxi Man. Frank. That's right. It's Frank. Let me tell you, so weird having like Cillian Murphy do his Irish accent and then to hear Brendan Gleeson, noted Irish actor, doing like a London cabbie voice. I was just like, whoa. Ah. I'm used to Banshees of Inisherin, Brendan Gleeson, or where he gets to use his actual accent. So that was fine. But Alex, what'd you think of the whole bit with Frank and Hannah?
It's cool. It's cool that he had like a little bit of backstory. So I think this was one of the main things that I actually enjoyed about this movie. I'm going to go on a tangent that's not directly related to your question, but
I guess we'll try it for this podcast. It'd be unique ground.
I think what actually I enjoyed the most about 28 Days Later is it really focused more on the human experience and humans being the villains rather than the infected. I think like if we're looking more modern, something like Last of Us did this really well, where it's like, oh, infected are huge, like supposed to be a huge part, but it's like they're more so like a tertiary character, you know?
They're a nuisance.
And it's not the main focus, because I think if you make the main focus as like the infected, I don't think this movie would have been as good, because how many infected can you fight off and hunt and survive against for an hour and 50 minutes, right? I think the human part of this is much more interesting. So I think throughout the movie, there's little tidbits of writing that really showcase that human condition. And part of that was Hannah and Frank, and just like little off pieces of dialogue where it's like they talk about the mother, and you can clearly see the relationship this father and daughter have for each other. And, you know, even that grocery store scene was like it like fit in so well, because it's like, it's not all about the infected, you know. It's all about it's about living, and not just living to survive, but enjoying living, right? Being happy about living, and
making the best of it. Yeah, I really liked Frank's character, like his optimism of like trying to keep his spirits up for his kid. Like obviously he's really, you know, he's got Hannah to look forward to, and I loved his little tidbits of like clinging onto the world, like the world that was. Like they get into his cab and he immediately starts the meter running, and he's like, oh, I don't take cash or I don't take credit cards or checks, so hope you have cash. And then like when they go to the grocery store and he just like lays the credit card down on the counter, I was like, oh, he's just like making a go of it and like trying to be positive in the face of this obviously huge disruption and tragedy that's happened in the world. And I really felt his character was served well by him being like, we're going to get to Manchester, it's all going to be okay. And then when that doesn't pan out, you know, you see him finally crumble, and then it gives his death like meaning, and it's like a bit more sad, I found.
Yeah.
When we did lose him, even though he died in like a really stupid way, where it's like, don't stand directly under a corpse that's dripping and look right up at it.
I mean, what are the odds though? It could have dripped anywhere else.
Could just right into the eyeball. What about you, Luke? Hannah and Frank vibes? How'd you like them?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have good people surviving too and working together. I liked Hannah's line where it's like, you're wrong. You do need us just as much as we need you. But the whole Frank death scene was a real low point of the movie, honestly, because yes, he's unbelievably stupid. But also, like, all the soldiers have been there the whole time. Why are they waiting until someone gets infected to show themselves? Like, there are clearly four people who are not infected who they are waiting for, unless we're supposed to assume they were waiting for one of the guys to die because of their deeper plan. But, like, I don't think that would have been an issue. They had all the guns anyway. So I was just like, what the fuck are these soldiers doing? Just waiting around to see what? What could they possibly hope to see first? I mean, this is worst case scenario, right?
Like
someone of them die. Mm. Become rage infected.
Yeah.
What if one of the women had died, right?
Well, I mean, like, Frank could have rage killed the girls, right? Like, what? It was so...
Yeah.
It was the most obvious this is a movie thing of a number of them in this film that I just like, whatever. It's like... So frustrating when that happens in movies.
See, for me, I think this is a movie so frustrating part happened earlier when they're in the tunnel and they have to change the tire Frank like ramps over all the cars and slashes the tire. And then they're like, the infected are coming. Will all three just lift the car while Hannah changes the tire? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if we could just be lifting a car.
And of course, they have a conversation. It's like, well, this is the fastest way. I was like, yeah, it's also an enclosed space where there's rage infected around. Just go the long way. Where else do you have to be?
Go the long way.
Like, what the fuck? Like, right? It's just... Oh, so stupid.
I don't want to tip our scariest parts of the movie, our potential scariest parts of the movie, but I got to ask you, Alex, how was the scene with
all
the
rats? Yeah, that's
the
scariest part of the movie.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
They're all running there, like the Pied Piper's blowing his tooting his toots. I don't know.
Tooting his toots.
Shit's gross and scary.
Just so gross and scary. Also, one of the movie logic pieces that I would have loved for them to explain more was like, the rules are don't go alone and don't go out in nighttime. And I was like, why? I hope they're going to explain why the zombies don't come out at night. And then it was literally just like daytime is safety. Like that was it. Like it was like our catchphrase. That was the only reason for it. I would have loved them to have some reason, you know, I Am Legend, they're like sensitive to sun or whatever because they're vampires. Like, how come nighttime is worse? But they didn't.
It's
really
harder to see at night. That's why, Billy.
You know what? I can accept that.
And if you can't see as well, then you can't see if an infected is close by.
I guess so. And if like neither one gets an advantage at night, it's just that like being a human and uninfected gives you a disadvantage at night. Okay. You know what?
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Of course. Hire me to write the new movie.
Plot hole closed. Yeah, Alex Garland. I would love to introduce you to Alex Wan. Anything else about the middle part of the movie, the little taxi ride? We love the picnic. That was fun.
Yeah, picnic was fun. You know, once again, you know, the human element of this movie where, you know, the infected isn't the main focus of it, but it's a driving force is when he has to kill the child infected. And yeah, it's just like it adds more depth to this and you don't have to necessarily speak it, you can just show it, and yeah it's nice. It was good.
So then we move into the worst part of the movie for me, the compound of soldiers who are luring people in to have women. Let's talk about it. Right away I was like, these are bad guys. As soon as they're like, come here, everything's gonna be fine. Like, I don't know if that's because I've seen all of Walking Dead, and anytime there's like, come on down to our safe place, it's like, it's safe, except it's not safe, and humans are the real bad guys. So I like immediately knew that it was all these soldier boys were dangerous. And Kelly was like, I haven't seen any women. This is weird, right? And I was like, yeah, something's up. Something's up for sure. But what do we think of Doctor Who himself, Christopher Eccleston, being a bad guy?
I actually really liked the third act of this movie. I thought it was the strongest part as far as like storytelling goes. Because probably, and it's like sad to say, but the soldiers in this sort of situation, it's one of the most realistic things that would happen, I believe. I mean,
so gross.
The idea of soldiers behaving responsibly in wartime or in like looting times is pretty recent, and it's still not like obviously across the board. The vast majority of human histories, when one army beat another and got to raise the town, and the soldiers just had their way with everything. And that's one of the...
Listeners, Luke means raise with a Z, not like raise the roof, raise the town.
That's right. And it's
just
like,
wanted to clarify that.
One of the saddest and most tragic elements of human nature, but there it is. But I think what I really liked about it is that it wasn't like universal in the sense of like, there was one or two huge dickheads and... people who would probably be criminals in civil society. And then there was the Eccleston kind of like a little bit chagrined, but this is just the way it has to be to keep the peace. And then the one guy who's like totally against it. And then the two or three green young guys who are like titillated by the idea of being with a woman. They're probably virgins and like they don't really know what to do. They're not strong enough to stand up against the assholes. and they totally crumble mm-hmm. when shit hits the fan, when Jim comes back, you know, that kind of thing. So I liked the dynamics mm-hmm. of it being realistic, unfortunately, but then also like a little bit schismatic within, and some of the guys' hearts not really in it, even if they were like really excited to get laid or something like that, you know? And then
their heart's not in it, but their dick is.
Exactly. And then the, you know, one or two truly psychopathic, you know, criminally inclined guys. And I mean, it gets a little Hollywood-y revenge style with Jim, like becoming like the infected, where you only see him run past the screen and he's like moving. Then he goes to Michael Myers school of sneaking around and everything.
Oh, does he ever?
Yeah. That was funny. But I guess, like soldiers and armies are almost always made up of young men from working class backgrounds. Like, it's, yeah, you know, I'm not stereotyping, but it's, there's definitely that element of human nature in, you get a whole group of young men around each other. I mean, young men are the worst group of people for society. You know? So fortunately, some of them can grow out of it. I think, so I can't remember what said, yes. Men are basically useless till they're 30. And so I thought, and I'd seen it before, so I knew how it ended, but I liked how Jim like paid attention to the compound, figured out how to use their own defenses against them, all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. It kind of almost like a MacGyver-esque way of using the compound to beat everybody.
Yeah, he's really resourceful.
So that was cool. Yeah,
Schrodinger's chained infected.
Yeah, exactly.
Not Schrodinger. Yeah, Chekhov's. Sorry.
Chekhov's chained infected. Yeah.
So, well, I mean, is it alive or not? That's a good Schrodinger question.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, no, I thought the whole soldier compound, all of it was, to me, the best part of the film.
Yeah, and like they obviously set up Mitchell, the like most asshole-ish of the soldiers, where it's just like, trust me, you're going to hate this guy, and then he's going to die really gruesomely, and you're going to go, yay, movie. And that's what happened, because, you know, Jim gets his hero moment where he's like just shoves his fucking thumbs through his eye sockets and kills the guy. Ugh, so gross.
He did it before, it was cool.
Yeah. Did it before, it was cool. I have to say, though, throughout this whole movie, the amount of blood that just sprays on people's faces and into their open mouths and on their bodies is like, everybody's infected all the time. Like, what are you talking about?
It's not just in the blood. It makes the you know, what's it called? The blood system? The
mucous membranes?
What's the name of the blood system? Is it just the blood system?
Circulatory system.
Yeah, the circulatory. Yeah, there we go. Just makes the circulatory system become geysers.
Just spraying blood everywhere. Really builds up blood out of your
blood
mouth.
Pressure.
Just like,
everyone is so on edge.
Yeah. Well, they're so angry. I get it. They're just like, argh! It's ready to
rage.
Spray out of them. I loved Hannah's like sort of revenge, where when Jim gets shot by Major West, and then she just reverses the car into the like chained up zombie who like pulls him through the back window. I was like, mm-hmm. yeah, good job, Hannah.
I like how they showed like back at the gas station that like, you know, she can drive, so it wasn't like a mm-hmm. I'm just driving out of necessity for the plot of the movie. It's like, yes, it was for the plot of the movie, but it was like built upon, there was foundation to it.
Yeah, but why the fuck is he sitting in the car?
Yeah, I don't know. He's just like, they're going to escape. I'm going to sit in the car and wait for them.
I have never been in a particularly survival-based situation, but I know that you only go into an enclosed space if you are 100% sure no one's going to find you. You're just totally limiting your options when you go into an enclosed space like that. And not even the front seat so you could drive away. Like, what the fuck, man?
Right? He's like, oh, my cab is here. And just like got in and was like, I'll wait. I'll wait for the driver to come, and then we'll go to the pub.
as I reflect on my terrible behavior.
On my terrible, terrible behavior. And like the whole reason was, it was like, oh, some of the younger guys were sad and feeling suicidal about not having like had sex. So we put out this call to lure women and trap them
into. No, I don't think that was it. I don't think that was the reason. They felt they were suicidal and gave up hope because humanity was lost. And then he's like, no, I got an idea.
Right, yeah. Mitchell and those young guys really seem like humanists to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's one thing that always bums me out about post-apocalyptic movies is where they immediately reduce women into just like chattel breeding stock, basically, where they're like, well, we have to keep the human race going. And the only way to do that is to subjugate all the women around me. And it's like,
That's a big problem with that. It's like, why do we have to keep the human race going? Why can't we just end it now? I think it's fine.
It's true, we've had a good run.
I think it'd be way more impressive, like Alex Swan, last of the humans, rather than be known as Alex Swan, leader of this sex rape cult.
Yeah,
like, that doesn't sound good.
I'm glad that's not what you want to be known for.
Who would know Alex Swan as last of the humans?
He would. Alex Wong
would
know.
Yeah, I would know.
Yeah,
he would know. And it's good the rage chimps would know, too. Like, the chimpanzees?
Yeah.
They'll know.
They'll know. Yeah, it's just, like, obviously, if, like, people are invested in keeping the human race going, you're going to have people on both sides of the reproductive coin being on board. You don't have to subjugate people. Yeah. But, like, it's just a thing that annoys me. Like, you know, in Mad Max, in Fury Road, there's that huge, huge subjugation of, like, women part and in this one. And
again, unfortunately, what does happen in a breakdown of, like, law and order is that psychopathic warlords rise and they're henchmen. Yeah. And those are not people who respect women. So it's like,
yeah. It's such a bummer. because like, yes, that's like what would happen, but also, I don't know, you're writing a fictional story, so you could make it like whatever happens be what happens in the world, and that would be fine. You don't have to just be like, well,
or you could people do you rapes. Could do it the other way and be like Futurama, where it's, well, you know, still rapes, but it's death by schnoo-schnoo.
but I mean, death, like, what those movies still do is have non-psychopathic people help. Right? That's true. The gyms, there are the Mad Maxes, who are, like, civilized and ethical, if still imperfect, right? And so it's
and, you know,
and like Selena and Hannah fight back when they can, which is also what would happen. So
they do. Yeah. It was good. Like, yeah, they're painted as villains to be villainous, and like we get our hero moments and we get Jim coming to save the day, and then we get Hannah having a moment of, you know, she hesitates more than a heartbeat to kill him, and he's like, ah, that means you love
me. Do you mean
me. Selena? I do mean Selena, yes. I do not mean the child, Hannah. I meant Selena. Thank you for correcting me.
She does have a heart.
Yeah. And then she does have a heart.
Thoughts on drugging a child, though? Thoughts on that?
Not. It's like the real Sophie's Choice situation.
It's like bad situation.
Yeah, it's a real shit versus diarrhea situation. You don't want either, but if you have to pick one, yeah. I did like how she was kind of loopy, but still with it enough to hang on the back of the Oculus mirror and hide from the
Is
one
she,
infected.
She stoned. It's a long story. What?
Sorry. Yeah. It's like, is this now the time for a little jokey joke? All right. And then Jim gets shot and they drive away. Major West dies. And then it's another 28 days later. Very fun.
Also the title of the movie.
It is the title of the movie.
Alias is the name of a show.
Do you think that the fighter jets flew over and it was just like, H, well, nothing to do there. H-E, well, nope. Still nothing, and it was like only by the time they got to hello.
We got enough he's already.
Can you imagine if they like flew over hell and it was like, never go here again?
Well, we can't fly over here.
And like a simple, like a high would have sufficed. Like, that's significantly less linen. Like, what?
Yeah. Same word, basically.
You could have got it there way sooner.
Do you think Jim was like, or Hannah and Selena were like, could we just write hi? And he was like, no. Thematically, I've been shouting hello every time I'm by myself, so we're stitching hello on the ground.
I'm a sucker for tradition.
Yeah.
So it's implied that, like, when he woke up those 28 days later, it wasn't him waking up the first time, right? He's already been recovering and has been helping. Yeah. Okay.
He wasn't also in like a second coma.
Yeah.
Just for
bullet ridden coma.
No, he had been helping, and you know, they've got a little farm in the countryside, and I guess the infected die after what, 50 days of like not eating?
Was that said?
They're starving to death? Well, I don't know, because like there's a couple shots of infected going like laying on the road. When we see the like Evil Dead shot of like the plane flying over the countryside, we see a couple infected lying and like weakly raising their head. And I took that to mean that they were like starving to death because like they're not eating anything.
Oh, I thought it was just a midday nap. You know, you ever have a big lunch and you just want to take a nappy nap? Close your eyes a little bit?
They're just having a little siesta? Yeah. Or maybe. Could have equally possible. Just the even infected need their 8 hours of sleep and a couple naps. And then that's the end of the movie. We assume they get rescued.
Nope, because there's a 28 weeks later.
Yeah, but if I remember right,
yes,
it's all different characters in that one.
Yes, it's a different director. Danny Boyle, I think, is on as like a consultant, but it's like a different main character and different plot.
Yeah, the main point of the consultant was you can never say the word zombie.
It's like how in The Walking Dead, then there's Fear of the Walking Dead and,
yeah,
you know, something else, The Walking Dead, just same universe.
Mm.
Yeah. Yep. So, final thoughts, Luke Mason, you've said everything you have to say. What do you got?
Yeah, I was, I guess, mildly disappointed overall, just because of how well I remembered it and enjoyed it. But the good parts were still good, so good enough.
Okay. Alex, you got anything last thing to say?
No, it was a entertaining film, and it matches the theme for the time, and it is extra eerie because of post-COVID.
It's true. All right, well then, let's move into the scariest part of the movie, this bottom section. Luke, you picked it. You start us off.
Like, this movie suffers from all of the jump scare type of, whoa, here's an infected, and here's an infected, and here's an infected. So I'm just so immune to those kind of scares.
Look at everyone. We got a badass over here.
Are you saying there's nothing to fear?
Honestly, I didn't feel scared at all, or there was like no scary parts.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the weirdest part would have been like the beginning, being all by yourself in a big city like that. That would have been weird. So I'll say that.
Yeah.
Weirdest part of the movie.
I did like the first infected he sees in the church with like the father when he
shouldn't have done
hits
that.
Him with the can and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that.
Also, that's another thing about this movie is how many times Jim has like very intimate interactions with infected and never gets infected, and like very tangential interactions, other characters get infected like that. It's just so funny.
Yeah. It's so fucking convenient, isn't it? So
fucking convenient.
It's just so damn convenient.
All right, my scariest part of the movie is just the scene where they're trying to strip Selena and they're gonna like assault her. And I was just like, oh no, I don't like it. Humans are the bad guys. The infecteds are annoying, but the humans are the bad guys. Scariest part for me was that bit. Alex Wan, your scariest
bit.
Rats.
It's always the rats.
The rats. It's gotta be the rats.
It's always the rats.
As soon as that happened, I was like, Alex isn't gonna like this bit. Not happy right now. All right, well, let's rate this thing and then cheer something. Get the fuck out of here. So, Luke, what are you rating it out of? What are you giving it?
Should we rate it out of? I think we should rate it out of 5 unspoiled apples.
I thought you might have said 5 obvious Pepsi product placements.
Yeah, those apples looked good. They looked good.
Dude, they look great. What are you giving it?
You know, it's got good performances and of the era. There's a nostalgia factor, but I think it's a pretty basic film, actually. But the ending was entertaining and a little bit more exciting. So I guess 3 apples out of 5.
Yeah. 3. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm overall more positive. Again, this was a first time for me, so I didn't have any of the nostalgia for it, but I had heard the positive word of mouth, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the world set up, and I'm glad to have crossed it off my list of movies I've seen now. And I'm going to give it a 4.1 out of 5. 4.1 apples out of 5. Alex?
Yeah, it was pretty entertaining. Finally got to see the thing in its entirety, and I thought it was good. And I liked that it focused more on the humans than the infected. 3.6 apples out of 5.
3.6 apples out of 5. Did you watch this one on your own, or did you have a little watch party like you sometimes
watch
do?
Party.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Alrighty. Well, that's going to bring us to my favorite section of the show, the something to cheer section. So I'm going to throw it back to you one more time, Luke. What are you cheering this week?
Another tangential thing that just occurred to me, because we talked about how this happened just before September 11th. My cheer is music related, so I'm going to say that...
I thought your cheer was going to be September 11th.
In August 2001, Jimmy Eat World released their breakout album, Bleed American, which they renamed on September 12th to just Jimmy Eat World. But then also, about
sense.
2 years after, renamed it back to Bleed American. And one of the songs is called Bleed American. And so people in England, here's the English tie-in, know that song as Salt, Sweat, Sugar. Because that's what they changed the name to for that time period.
Salt, yeah, Sweat, Sugar.
It's a lyric and song. Anyway, my cheer is that in June, I am going down to Spokane to see Yellow Card and Third Eye Blind in concert. And I am extremely excited for this, as Third Eye Blind is one of my all-time favorite bands, and I've never seen them. So this is going to be quite the experience.
Ooh, very exciting. Very exciting. Can I circle back to your Jimmy Eat World fact? Do you know why they had to rename it for the English release?
I think they just...
Because the implication of bunch of Americans dying and then having their album called Bleed American.
No, not that one. The Salt,
well,
Sweat Sugar.
So Salt, Sweat Sugar was a lyric in Bleed American. Mm-hmm. And so I think they changed it to Salt, Sweat, Sugar, like, across the world. But then when they changed it back to Bleed American a few years later, they also changed the song title back to what it originally was. And I think it just didn't catch on in the UK. So it just stayed Salt, Sweat, Sugar.
Because I know that UK has some weird, like, conventions for naming things for, like, their audience. Like, they couldn't call them the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when they came out. It was the Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles. Because ninjas were, like, associated with, like, violence and stuff. So I was just wondering if it was, like, another sort of little weirdsies.
I actually don't know the details of it, but...
All right.
But anyway, it's nice to have some things to get us through this semi-charmed kind of life, you know?
Toot, toot, toot. Well, I'm cheering that. No, I'm cheering... I had a lot of good fun in April. Very exciting to see Amy and do the eclipse and all that. But the thing I'm picking to cheer is I have recently got my hands on a piano keyboard. I haven't played piano for almost 20 years, and I've got a little, not a full grand piano length. It's like 60 keys or whatever, but I've been playing piano again for the first time. Like, one, I haven't forgot as much as I thought. And two, it's just been really fun to like make music again, because I think I've been missing that in my life. And so I'm here for playing the piano. That's my cheer. Playing the piano. Alex Juan, what are you playing? What are you cheering? What are you playing? Are you playing any games?
I'm playing with myself, you know.
Nice.
Sure, yep. Yeah. Every week.
Yeah, I'm just cheering my upcoming trip to Vegas. I've never been, and I'm very excited. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be nice and hot there, so looking forward to that.
Nice.
Are you gonna,
you know, being hot and doing degenerate things?
Are you gonna try and get a ticket to a Golden Knights game?
No,
they'd probably be pretty expensive.
Are you gonna go to the wedding chapel and see if somebody gets married?
No, I'm going to Top Golf. I'm going to X-Pot, and I'm gonna go gamble, and then we're gonna go to Margaritaville.
Yeah. Well, have fun, enjoy that. But yeah, that'll wrap us up for the episode. So I'll take. Luke, where can people find you? Where can people hear what you're talking about?
Really True Fiction and The Liberal Soul. Still there, somehow.
Still there, somehow. Alex Juan, you got anything you want to promote or shout out or talk about?
No.
All right, great. I want to talk about the upcoming Nothing to Fear spinoff that I'm working on with a friend of the show, writer in their own right, and chief Alex antagonizer, Danae, as well as a fellow podcaster, Josh, the ghostest with the mostest of the Super Scary podcast. We are embarking on Twilight Summer. This summer, we're going to watch all the fucking Twilight movies. At the time this episode comes out, we'll probably have a couple of our episodes recorded, but this is a call to action. Stay tuned on this very feed for episodes around the Twilight Saga.
Are you going
to
read the books?
We are not going to read the books. We're just going to talk about the movies. So maybe if you want to read the books for Really True Fiction, Luke, we can... No, I think no. But no, it's very exciting. We are designing a new sort of logo for the miniseries, and I'm really excited about it. It's going to be a bunch of stupid zany fun. So those episodes should be coming out right around the 4th anniversary of Nothing to Fear. So late June, early July.
It's 4 years?
So stay tuned. Stay tuned for Twilight Summer. Yeah. But until then, until that auspicious occasion, we'll see you here next month. And I'll say thank you for joining me, Luke and Alex. If you'd like to say goodbye, now's your chance.
No, I don't think I will.
I refuse.
There we go. Love to hear it. We'd love to see it. I'll say goodbye on behalf of all three of us, and I don't care what anybody thinks. And remember, folks, they're just movies. There's nothing to fear. Hey, listeners, just jumping in at the end of the episode really quickly to cross-promote the Super Scary Podcast. It turns out that Josh also recorded an episode on 28 Days Later, and I think you should go listen to it. Josh, if you don't know, you don't know him yet, maybe, but stay tuned for some episodes coming out in the summer as he, I, and Danae, friend of the pod and friend in real life, are talking about the Twilight movies this summer for a special spinoff podcast that I'm doing called Twilight Summer, appropriately enough. But Josh recorded some zombie movies for his podcast, and it's very serendipitous that we both talked about 28 Days Later. So when you're done listening, go right there, subscribe to Super Scary Pod and listen and do all the things there and say hi. Say, tell them that Nothing to Fear sent you. Thanks. Hope you're all cool. See, this is why I need a catchphrase. Bye, everyone.